Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Mike Rolston, CEO of Blencow Resources. Welcome, Mike. How are you doing today?
Yeah, thank you, Phil. Very well, and happy to be here.
There could be some potential investors who don't know the Blencow story. Do you want to talk us through what Blencow does and its assets?
Yeah, approximately 2 years ago, Blencow Resources acquired the Orem Cross Graphite Project, which is located in Uganda, that is in East Africa. We believe Uganda is a very safe location, certainly in terms of African countries. It's one of the premier locations to be developing a long-term resource project. I've lived in East Africa and Southern Africa for half of my life, so I know the regions very well, and we're very happy with the process of developing a long-term resource project there. So we acquired the project. We believed that at the time anyway, despite the fact that graphite hadn't yet got the prominence that it's starting to get now, that there was plenty of upside potential. We acquired a project with a 21-year mining license already in place. That's a huge advantage. And we knew that there were some 2 to 3 billion tons of graphite, most of it near to surface, which obviously made it very attractive. There's quite a bit of work done by the previous owners to effectively delineate that sort of estimate. So we knew what we were getting into. And our role beyond that over the last 2 years has really been to take a step backwards, because the previous owners had not done any proper JORC resource drilling. And that is a requirement in order to move forward with feasibility studies. The feasibility studies themselves are absolutely imperative for us to go and get funding to take it into production. So we took a step back. We did a very extensive drilling program in 2020, and we followed up with an infill program in 2021, the results of which are going to come through on a revised JORC resource quite soon. So we've got ourselves a project that definitely has huge potential. It's a standout in comparison to other graphite projects, and we can go through it in some detail, but we've obviously got a plan to take it forward into production as quickly as we can.
Superb. So, I mean, that's a great introduction. And also, I like the fact that, you know, nickel, looking at nickel prices and also obviously lithium, that they've gone pretty much, I think nickel's gone through the all-time high again, and certainly lithium is coming close. How long do you think it will be before graphite catches up to those other electric vehicle metals in terms of pricing?
Yeah, so just for those listeners that don't necessarily understand, in the lithium-ion battery, you've got key battery metals. That is lithium, cobalt, nickel, and graphite, all of which are essential, some of which are replaceable, but I'm here to tell you that graphite is not replaceable. So it's an irreplaceable part, in fact, of the anode within the lithium-ion battery. So yes, there's been huge attention on lithium over the last approximately 1 year. There seems to be a lot of attention falling onto nickel now as the next cab off the rank. Although I do believe some of the price spiking over the last couple of days has been due to the fact that Russia is one of the biggest producer of nickel in the world. And obviously there's the potential for sanctions that will impact. But we believe that graphite has definitely got its own place in terms of price and demand growth. All the forecasts and all the analysts are telling us that there's going to be a massive shortfall from around about 2025. And that is because the growth in demand and the growth in requirement for graphite for these lithium-ion batteries is going to start moving higher and higher each and every year. And yet at the same time, it's incredibly difficult to bring a new mine into production. So you've got demand starting to move on the one side, supply not necessarily able to keep up. And we believe that you're going to see price incrementing happening for graphite as a result of that. In fact, we've already seen over the last 3 to 4 months about a 20 to 25% increment in the small fines, smaller mesh sizes for the, particularly for the product that's used in the batteries. So it's starting to happen. And I think that some of the actions that are happening in Eastern Europe are obviously going to create their own little spikes in the meantime. But over a longer period, it's definitely going to be high demand for graphite going forward.
So presumably that increase in graphite price will just mean a chunkier margin for Brez, right?
Absolutely. So our job is to get out there and put a PFS together that shows exactly what we can produce each and every ton of graphite, and that's delivered to Mombasa Port. And then everything that happens on the revenue side, which is pricing, obviously is profit. And the higher that goes over time, the better for us. So, yeah, we've got a very high quality concentrate. Our MET test results are coming through as being, as showing us that there's a very sort of, I think the entry level for batteries is about 94-95% in terms of the total graphitic content. And we've got around about 97%. So a very high concentrate percentage, as well as low impurities. And we think we're going to be have a product that's in demand going forward. Yeah.
So you've got 16 million tons JORC value at the moment, from what I can gather, and you're obviously awaiting the revised JORC resource estimate based on some extensive infill drilling from 2021 with the geological partner Minrom to provide that. Yeah. I mean, how long do you anticipate that will be before that revised JORC is given?
Well, it was meant to be out by the end of February, so we're cracking the whip with Minrom at the moment, and we're now into the first week of March. So we really are putting a lot of pressure on them. I think we're literally a week or so away from getting that done. But, you know, the sooner the better. We think that we're going to see quite a decent increment in terms of both the tons and the grade. But I will point out that, you know, when you're talking about 2 to 3 billion tons of graphite at the project, 16 million tons or 20, 25, whatever the number may be, is less than 1% of what the total graphite that's available out at Orem Cross. So it just proves that at any stage in the future, and I'm talking about over a mine life of in excess of 50 years, the owners of this project can look to just put a new drilling program in place. It's open at depth below the 25 meters that we've been drilling to. It's open along strike. It's open everywhere. There's high grade zones. There's pockets everywhere for us to go and find. We've picked a particular area that we like. We picked it and we drilled it out. Now we've infill drilled it so that we can put our mine plans over that for the PFS. But there's an awful lot of graphite there. And because it's so shallow and doesn't require any explosives, it's just a free dig, the ability to get it out and put it into the processing plant at a very low mining cost is hugely attractive.
Tell us a little bit about you. What's your background? Why on earth do you now have a graphite mine and a nickel sulfide in Uganda? How? Why?
Well, that's a good question. I was born in Zimbabwe. I was raised there and went to university in South Africa. So Southern Africa, I suppose, was my early home. I worked in the UK for a while and qualified as a chartered management accountant there, and then ended up living in Kenya for 6 years. Started up a company called Africa Online, which became the biggest internet service provider. And I loved it out there in East Africa. I think it's a beautiful place, but the people are fantastic. And it's very resource rich. If you can understand the geology of the Great Rift Valley, you've essentially got this huge, big geological fault that runs all the way from Uganda right through the center, DRC, all the way through Zambia and ends down in South Africa. And it's very resource rich. And Uganda's probably one of the most underdeveloped resource countries of that entire region in terms of that Central Rift Valley. So yeah, I've been involved. I came over to Australia in 2004. I've been involved in the mining industry ever since then. I've taken a couple of projects all the way through to production in gold, in coal. But we just saw an opportunity here. To be honest, we like graphite. We pick counter-cyclical projects because you can actually get them at a lower entry price. And that means that you're not overpaying. So all the shareholders that come in at the front end are not getting overdone at the beginning. They all can benefit from the upside as we put value on the table. And I think that's really where we find ourselves right now, where, you know, our market cap is still incredibly low. We're still, you know, below 10 million pounds. And for what we've actually got, and that's not even bringing the nickel sulfide project into play, for what we've got on the graphite alone, we should be seeing a much higher market cap. And our job is to go and unlock that value and to provide the JORC resource to estimate to obviously provide the MET test results, to provide the pre-feasibility study, and keep on adding value so that all the shareholders can gain as the market starts to understand the value of it.
Who were the previous owners of the graphite mine?
It was a company, Australian listed company called Consolidated African Resources. So they were listed on a secondary exchange here in Australia, not the main ASX. And as a result of that, they were very illiquid and they couldn't raise money to develop the project. So in a sense, they were going to lose it. And the best route for them was to take shares in Blenco and see if we could do a better job. So we did the deal purely 100% for shares, and they became our biggest shareholder. They've since left the register. We saw that they were a big seller onto the screen earlier this year, and we found buyers that stepped in and took them out because we obviously want as sticky a base of shareholders as possible. So they're no longer a shareholder, but they were obviously a major shareholder previously from the transaction.
So what percentage did they hold, Mike?
Originally, they held 25 million shares out of, I'm trying to think of how many shares we had at the time, approximately 20% of the company, 20 to 25% on the date of acquisition. Obviously, subsequent capital raises that we've done have diluted that position. And then they were selling on market along the way as well. So they're gone. And, you know, I wish them well. But they're no longer
shareholder. Okay, so basically to say that we've had a constant seller all along then in terms of the share price, which is good to know. For people who don't know what PFS is, tell me what it is. What does it stand for, and what does it do?
So last year we did what is called a preliminary economic assessment, and that was a purely internally driven exercise where for the first time we took all the parameters for a mining operation, put it together. And it came up with a mining operation, a financial model, and ultimately an NPV and an IRR. And that was fine. But
so let me stop you. NPV, so that's the net present value of what it's worth. And the IRR is the internal rate of return. So if you put some money in, you expect to get that return. Yeah, okay, right.
Correct.
Sorry, carry on.
So the next level beyond that preliminary economic assessment is the pre-feasibility study, where we take the same data, because obviously it doesn't change, and we involve a very experienced external party called Battery Limits in this case, who have advised and consulted on many substantial graphite projects around the world. And they come in as our technical partner to ensure that all the work that we're doing in every part of this, from infrastructure to mining to plant design to logistics to every part of it, they ensure that what we're doing is best practice, that will deliver the best result, and just to make sure there's a third party that can sense check everything and ultimately look at all the different options that are available to get us the best possible alternative to follow. And once we complete the PFS, we will be saying, right, that's what we want to do. That's the option that we've chosen. And then we'll move forward into a definitive feasibility study where we take that option and we drill down to the to every single point of detail to make sure that we've got it all covered. And that's just the traditional manner by which you take mining projects into production, because they are intensive capital exercises and you want to make sure that you're covering all the bases.
So you already have the mining license, which is a good thing. So when do you think pre-feasibility study will happen, then the feasibility study, and then I presume you get the diggers in and get this stuff out the ground? When's this likely to occur, the stuff out the ground?
So the plan as it stands for us is to complete the pre-feasibility study by the middle of this year, and then we want to build a pilot plant. We're talking about a plant that will deliver 1,500 tons of concentrate per annum. And when we ultimately take our main plant into production in 2025, we'll be producing 25,000 tons per annum. So it's a very small, I call it the dress rehearsal, and it allows us to essentially take every part of the mining project and put it into play in a much smaller context to obviously the main mining and processing operation that will happen later. And at the same time, it's not just doing it as a dress rehearsal to get all our ducks in a row. It's also very, very important in the sense that graphite needs to be pre-qualified in terms of selling it into end users down the line. So if we were to go away and start delivering a 25,000-ton plant, turn on the lights in a couple of years' time and say, right, we're open for business, we've got 25,000 tons, who wants to buy it? We would probably find that there's nobody that wants to buy. What we have to do is put a pilot plant in place next year, start to produce smaller quantities, send those out to the end users that like what they've seen, and start to show them that we can produce that quality in a mining and operating sense. And so they can understand the chemistry in terms of what's coming out of the ground, in terms of what's coming out of the processing plant. And that will pre-qualify us in their eyes so that when we do go into the main production a couple of years later, we're anticipating 2025, then we will have these end users ready to buy our products.
And I understand you already have one offtake agreement. And what industry is that in?
No, we don't. I don't know where that is. That's come from. We are in the final stages of completing our phase three metallurgical test work, and that will give us the final fact sheets in terms of what our end products look like. And there's likely to be four of them, and it will also tell us exactly what we've got to do in the processing plant to deliver them. So when we get those final fact sheets, and I'm estimating in the next 1 to 2 months, we will then be able to take those fact sheets. We've engaged with a very experienced sales and marketing consultant out of the States who's been involved in the graphite world for probably 30 years, and he understands the end user market better than anyone. And he's going to be advising us where we can put these products in terms of sending out samples to end users so that they can start looking at them. They will have the fact sheets in order to do their own assessments. And if they like it, well, obviously, then they will go and do their own testing. And ultimately, we'll start engaging with them to sell them product out of the pilot plant.
The situation in terms of the margins of this graphite, you're talking about what, I mean, if it was today, what sort of price are we talking about selling the graphite at? And what sort of price are we talking about all in sustaining costs for getting it out of the ground?
Well, our PEA last year showed that we can deliver it to Mombasa Port for $500 per ton. I think that the PFS is going to come in with approximately the same sort of numbers, but anywhere between $450 and $600 per ton is going to put us in the low 25 percentile in terms of operating cost graphite producers around the world. So, excuse me, anything sub $600, I'll be very happy with. Obviously, $500 is a lot better. At the moment, in terms of our PEA numbers, we envisaged a weighted average selling price for all four products of around about $1,050. I believe that those numbers are going to go up quite considerably. They're already starting to get, as I said earlier, there's been about a 25% rise in the small fines, which is the majority of our end product. And I think that we probably will be testing $1,200 to $1,300 per ton as a weighted average for all of our products. So that's a very substantial margin.
And the rarer jumbo flake goes for something like up to $2,500, I think I remember.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
Do you have any idea of how much of that jumbo flake you may have there at Orem Cross?
Yeah, we do. And the jumbo large flake component is around about, well, jumbo and large together are around about 35%. The large is probably more like 20 of that. So you've got about 10 to 15% of the jumbo and the super jumbo. So obviously the more of that, the better, because it gets higher prices, but it's a very speciality market. So you've got the higher prices leaning there, which helps us a lot. And then at the other end of the scale, you've got the majority, around about 45% of our end product being the small fines, which will go into the batteries. And it makes such a difference in terms of the price of that moving, because it's such a big part of our overall portfolio.
Yeah. So initially, as you've alluded to, I think that you just alluded to earlier, that you get this pilot plant up and running, then you're going to run the production to be what, somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 tons per year initially?
Yeah, that will be broken down into four products. So we'll be producing a jumbo product, a large product, and they've got different mesh sizes. That's how we define them. But I don't really think I think I'll lose some of the listeners if I start talking about mesh sizes. But a jumbo, a large, a medium flake, and a small fines. Those are the four products that we'll be selling.
Yeah.
And we're
talking about talk about a Cadbury's flake, Mike. It's a big flake. It's a small flake. It's a very small flake.
Correct.
and then
absolutely.
And then finally, you know, with the mindset of going to a full scale plant that maybe would be putting out what, say, 25,000 tons per year.
Yeah. So when we did the PEA last year, we didn't hold ourselves back in terms of what the market could absorb. So we said, how much can we produce? And we talked about a plant that could to deliver 75,000 tons per annum. And that obviously produces a heck of a good result, because you're theoretically selling a lot of product into the market. We've gone out and tested that, and it's clear that the market won't absorb us selling that quantity in from the day one. So I don't really have a problem with that. I think 25,000 tons as a starting point is an excellent starting position. It de-risks the project by starting a bit smaller. But at the same time, our CapEx, which was in the region of $80 million for that bigger plant, will probably halve. And it obviously allows us a much smaller capital expenditure at the front end. So, and then we're going to put it in a modular fashion that we can add another 25,000 and another 25,000 along the way. Yeah. And that's purely in anticipation of demand increasing.
Yeah, which surely it will do. I mean, I think, as you've said, most of these battery metals and battery, though it's not a metal, but battery input things that are required are in structural deficit, because there's no way the world expected us to need this much nickel, this much copper, this much graphite, this much whatever, you know, even titanium, because a lot of the batteries are wrapped in titanium as well. So all of these things are going to be in structural deficit for at least a decade, you would imagine, because there is no way you can bring on these things for that period of time. And I mean, I just quickly doing the calculations, basically even at the scenario of today, this small plant you hope to have up and running when? In 12 months' time, before 12 months' time? When?
Yeah, approximately middle of next year. So sometime around the middle of 2023.
So middle of 2023, you then should have annualized EBITDA of $800,000 or thereabouts per annum. You know, if you took the all-in sustaining costs of $500 or $600, as you said, to deliver it to port. And then obviously increasing by 2025 to $20-25 million of EBITDA. So to say now that the company, based on that resource, and we haven't talked about the nickel stuff yet, the nickel sulfide, that the company is worth currently £6.6 million, which is what it was worth 2 years ago. Okay, granted, share price is lower because you've raised a few shares or you've issued a few more shares. But basically, that means in terms of its market cap, it hasn't moved yet. You've proved all this up. So what's happening?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, that's the million-dollar question that if I could answer it, I would be pressing those buttons and getting the share price to change. Our job is to keep adding value. Our job is to keep marketing what value add that we put on and hoping that through that we can get the market to understand what we're doing and where it's going. I don't see any fatal flaws. I don't see any major impediments to us getting going. COVID has created a bit of an issue because you've not been able to travel, but as from next month, we can. So my CEO and myself will be traveling to Uganda. We'll be meeting up with government officials to essentially get their support to put this production, this pilot plant into production. They all want to see it happen. It's going to be a huge fanfare in Uganda to see a new mine start. They don't have that many. It's not like Australia or another big mining jurisdiction where there's new mines starting all the time. So we're going to get support. We've already got their support. And I just believe that over time, the market will see the value that's coming into this project as we move closer to production, maybe as we deliver a new JORC, maybe a PFS, I don't know. But it's obviously tricky for us because there's so much value in this project. Yeah, part of it, I think, is the education. I think people don't understand graphite quite as well as they understand gold or copper or some of the mainline metals. But I believe that graphite is certainly going to have its day in the sun. And 12 months ago, maybe 15 months ago, lithium producers or lithium explorers were under the cosh. They were not getting any love. I know several of them personally, and they were struggling. Today, they are, you know, jumping for joy, and ditto the nickel. And so I've been involved in this business for 20 years, and I understand the cycles come and they go, and very quickly, graphite can capture the attention of the market, and suddenly that share price can run. So I don't think we're far away from that, from a macro perspective and from our own micro perspective in terms of what we're doing.
All sounds good. Is there any levy in Uganda about that the Ugandan government place on your mine once it's up and running?
Yeah, there's a 5% royalty. And in fact, the new mining laws that are currently with the president in terms of coming into play, give them a 15% free carry interest in the project. However, if you already have a mining license, you're exempt. So stands right now, the fact that we picked up a mining license 2 years ago is probably worth its weight in gold.
You say 10%.
You know, we didn't know that, of course. We didn't know there was a new mining law coming. We're just going to keep on doing our business and make sure that we can deliver a project that has the sort of margin, that has the quality of the product. You've just got to tick every box, because any box left unticked is a problem.
Tell us now about this nickel sulfide project then, because obviously nickel heading towards $100,000 a ton. It's like, yeah, what's happening? And geographically, when I was reading the RNSs, you know, they're only 100 kilometers apart. So, you know, is there a possibility that you can share technology, share manpower, share knowledge?
Literally sitting in the middle of both of them is the town of Kitgum, which will become our regional center. And that's where we plan. Well, we've already got an office. We've inherited it with this project. So we're going to put our regional office in Kitgum, which will then manage both projects. And there's definitely synergies in terms of location. Ultimately, the same people can obviously look at both. But we have a feasibility study team that's doing the graphite, and we're going to have an exploration team that's doing the nickel, because it's a much earlier stage project. We like it because, again, it's a battery metal, another battery metal, so it fits into our portfolio very nicely. As I said, it was very synergistic in terms of location as well. But I love the fact that Rio Tinto and Sepa Resources have spent upwards of $15 million doing what I call the real hard yards, the early stage exploration, where you really are digging deep and spending a lot of money and generally not getting the returns for that, but you're building a database of knowledge. And ultimately, they went and drilled it. And the best of those projects in terms of what they drilled was this Aquila Congo tenement that we've now acquired from them. So to follow that up, it's early stage exploration, but they've already identified three particular lenses. One is quite shallow near the surface. The other one's about 250 meters, and the other one's around 300 meters. And the drilling that's been done to date has delivered nickel and copper in all three of those lenses. There's about an 800-meter mineralized zone with massive sulfides in there, which tend to host the nickel and copper that we're looking for. And what we're going to do is put a program of electromagnetic airborne EM work to go identify targets. And ultimately, if that lights up and shows there are plenty of targets around, we're going to go and drill those targets and hopefully add more nickel and copper to the story. Ultimately, we need to add a whole lot more to build it into a project. It's all well and good having a little bit of nickel, but we need a lot of nickel to make it into a project. So we picked it up in a way that we are able to only pay for anything as and when we go forward and have success. So at any stage, if we decide we don't like what we're seeing, we can easily walk away, and really we're not paying a whole lot for it. So it's staged such that only upon success do we pay them anything. And as we have more success and more success, then ultimately they will get the lion's share of what we're going to pay for this project at the back end. And yeah, look, we like it. We think it's, I've spoken to several specific nickel geologists because they are a rare breed. And they tell me that the work that's been done there identifies some very, very interesting structures. And, you know, that's good enough for us to go and explore. So it represents upside for the company. It represents a project that can potentially give us, without getting ahead of ourselves, a very, very valuable project going forward. But it is exploration, and we're aware of the fact that we've got a long way to go. Whereas the graphite being our priority project, we know it's there. We know exactly how much is there. We know how much we're going to be mining and processing and selling. So, yeah, they're two different stages of projects, but I like them both for different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a cash cow quite obviously with the graphite, and that is going to be the making of the company. I mean, 20 million EBITDA in basically we're talking about 3 years time. It's got to value the company at a couple of $100 million minimum without the resource, and then you've got the nickel thrown in. And yeah, they've already spent twice your market cap trying to find out where the nickel is, so you've got a much better idea of where the nickel is. Yes, you need to spend some money, but not a huge amount, to either say yes, this is worth it, or no, here's your project back, goodbye, thank you. All sounds very good, and your share
price... No-brainer, really, isn't it? When you put it like that, it's a no-brainer.
Your share price looks ridiculously cheap. Phil, any last statements that you've got?
I've got eight reasons why I like it. It won't cost
eight.
Only eight. Yeah, it's not one I'm a strong in.
Well, let's keep talking, and we'll try and get it up to 10.
All right. I'll tell you what.
Can somebody pass me a Cadbury's flake quick?
I'll give you eight. You give me two more, Kev, or one each. Okay. So,
all right.
First one. It won't cost much to mine. It's a shallow deposit. I mean, that's great. Safe jurisdiction in Uganda. If the graphite price does go higher, what's already looking like a chunky margin will balloon out into a really sizable stream of cash flow. We said that already.
Yeah.
Long mining license, 21 years from 2014. Blenko just has to dig the stuff out of the ground and send it through a plant for processing. So there's no need for any expensive ore crushers or explosives from what I can gather. Low IISC, meaning excellent margins, especially love the jumbo flake element. Full-scale plant is likely to be up and running sometime around 2025. And all of the above for a 6 million market cap, guys.
Okay, add in the extra two?
We're going to add the extra two, that they have a potential nickel-copper project with nickel suddenly going to the moon in prices. If we actually even create even a small nickel production, you know, a few hundred or thousand tons a year, is going to be a huge amount of EBITDA.
I'll just add, Phil, one more thing is that from next year, we'll be a producer. And okay. That will separate us from hundreds of other wannabe graphite producers that haven't yet got there. And probably one more point is that you haven't touched on is the quality of the concentrates and the end product. Yeah. It's of a very high quality, low impurity. So there are good reasons everywhere, but we've just got to keep adding that value and telling the market.
So I will make it a dirty dozen as well, that the share price has actually touched 10p twice in the last couple of years. And now it's sitting around, I think, 3.7 to sell and 4.3 or 4.4 to buy. So that seems like a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. We'll get back to those 10p heights that we had before. You know, like everybody, I think we've copped a little bit of flak from the Ukrainian crisis, but that's temporary. It's out of our control, so we'll just keep adding value in what we do.
Mike Ralston, CEO of Blenko Resources, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that, and thanks for the question. It's always good to sit down and answer some.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.